Hey everybody, welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Leah, and on this episode I'm giving you a quick shot of romance author spotlight edition. And on this author spotlight I am joined by Lauren Connolly. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Lauren Connolly is an award-winning author of contemporary and paranormal romance stories. She's lived among mountains, next to lakes, in an imaginary world. Lauren can never seem to stay in one place for too long, but trusts that wherever she's residing, there is a dog who thinks he's a troll, twin cats hiding in the couch, and bookshelves bursting with stories written by authors she loves. So before we talk love in plain sight, let's get to know you a little bit.
Okay.
So what drew you to romance as a writer?
I mean, what really drew me to romance as a writer was being a romance reader. And that came about because, so I used to be, or I kind of found my initial love of reading in the fantasy world, the fantasy realm. Reading fantasy books, like Tamara Pierce was, you know, pivotal in my life. And so I would read books from the fantasy section of the store. And I just remember as like a young reader, I really loved some stories and some weren't working for me. But at that time, I wasn't really kind of picking apart why things didn't work. I was like, they do or they don't. But then I worked at a Barnes & Noble as a bookseller. And so you do a lot of shelving and you get a little bored, so you start reading the backs of books. And so I was reading the backs of books in the romance section, and I started to realize, oh, the fantasy books that were ones I loved had a romance plot line. And it's just, it's so hard though, a lot of times, not so much nowadays, now that romanticy is like exploding, but like back a decade or so ago,
it was hard to find that blend.
Yeah, or it was hard to even kind of distinguish if it was going to be in the book just by reading the back copy of it. Because sometimes I felt like I was surprised with it. I was like, oh, it's lucky me, I found a romance plot line. So then once I realized like, oh, that's what the romance genre is, I can just automatically get this if I get a book from this section. Then I started reading it. And I went to college. My undergraduate degree is in professional writing, and I did creative writing courses, but it was very literary fiction focused. And so I felt like I had to kind of push myself to write when I was writing literary fiction. But then once I started writing romance, I was like, oh, this is so much fun. I mean, there's definitely plenty of days where it's still hard and I still have to push myself, but it's so much more joyous for
And
me to
freeing.
write romance. And so that's kind of like being a romance reader. Once I realized that was the genre I wanted to read, it transformed into the genre I wanted to write.
So when you were in the Barnes and Noble and shelving books, would you just stop and like read like a random chapter in the middle of the book?
Yeah, it'd be like, oh, it's a quality control check. I just need to, oh, I think maybe a page bent. I need to stare at this book for 5 minutes.
See, that would have been amazing. Where I grew up, I grew up in the middle of the country, and so like everything was a good 15 to 20 minutes away for me. And the closest Barnes and Noble at the time was like 45 minutes away. It was rough.
I was lucky. I did have like a Borders near me growing up, and then Borders went out the window,
Hopefully,
but then a Barnes and Noble opened up. And then, yeah, I. But I do feel for you because I just moved away. But for the past 4 years, I was living in like a rural area of Georgia. And there were no bookstores around. Like, yeah, for a good 40-hour long drive. And I'm like, luckily, nowadays, you can order them and
Yeah, they
everything.
just show up at your house.
Yeah, but you want to like browse through the shelves and everything.
Sometimes. Well, it's funny because like my kids will talk about how like if we order something, I'll show up the next day. I'm like, when I was younger, I had to look through a catalog and then call and give them the catalog number. And it was like maybe like 2 weeks before it showed up. They're like, what? What is that? I'm like, that is what time has done.
That is progress.
Exactly. So what made you write that first novel and publish it?
The first book that I published was not the first book that I finished. I definitely wrote a
Is that
few.
in a box, never to be
Yeah,
seen
they're just
again?
like tuck them away where no one can see them. But I was introduced to National Novel Writing Month when I was in college because I took a novel writing class, and I think they were kind of like, okay, the only way that we can actually write a novel in a semester is if we have the students do National Novel Writing Month. So I did that a few years in a row, and that's like in November, for people who are not familiar, in November there used to be, I think it's fallen on the wayside because it had some problematic stuff pop up. But in the past, it was basically challenging yourself in November to write 50,000 words. And so it was like 1,667 a day to hit that goal. And it's you end that month with like terrible, terrible draft. Is not a good book at all, but it like proves to you that you are capable of writing a vast amount of words, which with a lot of new authors is like the first hurdle. It's just once you start writing and you get a chapter or two in, I think it kind of like you'll get a block that's like, how can I do this 50 more times or something? And so that was a great thing about National Novel Writing Month. And people still do in like November, they challenge themselves. And so the first book that I published, which I self-published, I wrote the first half of it basically during November, National Novel Writing Month. And then I can, by the time I got to the end of the month, again, I just had about half of the book, but I felt like the story was going somewhere. I was still enjoying it. I was like, I think readers might enjoy this once I finish it and then give it a bunch of edits. And so that was the first, yeah. And then at the time, I was reading a lot more independently published books, and I was like reading some blog posts and everything where these authors were talking about the indie publishing process. So I was like, okay, I think this is doable. And I had a dream of working with traditional publishers, which I get to do now, which is awesome. But I'm also really glad that I got started in the indie sphere, that I didn't like take this book that I was really proud of and put it on the shelf to never be seen. 'Cause I mean, like, it's my first book. It may or may not be quality at this point, but you know,
But
I'm proud of myself.
you
Yeah.
accomplished that task. Well, in the indie industry, it was such a boom for the publishing world. Like
Yeah.
it changed it forever.
It definitely, yeah, it drives a lot of the trends now. Yeah, I feel like a lot of traditional publishers are following along. Like because there is such a vast array of what is available in the indie sphere, readers can really push what they are in the mood for. And then, yeah, trad publishing kind of just reacts to that.
I mean, and that's the thing. Like, I mean, there's always been a genre, subgenre for every reader, but that is more and more true. Like, as like more and more like authors come onto the scene, because there's a little bit of literally everything out there anymore.
Yeah, and I mean like the general culture and world that we live in, that also affects like what we feel like reading at the time.
Oh
And
yeah, I'm definitely a mood reader, so.
yeah.
So do you have a subgenre that you currently like to read the most? 'Cause you write contemporary and paranormal, but do you focus r your reads on one or the other?
I'm definitely a mood reader, so I'm all over the place. And I will for sure read subgenres outside of what I'm interested in writing. Like I'll get in a historical mood and I'll just want to binge read historical books. I would never be able to write one. The amount of research and the amount of like attention that historical romance readers like will pay, there's a faction of them that will be like, they didn't have tennis at that point in time. How dare you include tennis? Like, I can't leave myself open to that amount of criticism. But I love, yeah, I go through cycles of what I'm in the mood for. And now that it's like, so I'm in North Carolina and it's getting chillier and the leaves are changing and everything. And I am just all about cozy, magical books right now. That is my bread and butter at the moment. I'm sure I'll burn out on them at some point, but this is like the perfect season for just like, I don't necessarily want the super high stakes, but also I do like a little bit of like whimsy and
Yeah.
whatnot, and I want them to be like eating yummy food and sitting by cozy fires. So that's what I'm in the mood for right now.
So when you're writing your stories, are you a plotter or are you a pantser?
Oh, I'm for sure a plotter.
Okay.
I love that is actually my favorite part of the process is plotting out the book, is basically telling the story to myself. I'll kind of write it out in a narrative
Okay.
form. And then I really like the tool Scrivener. And the cool thing about Scrivener is you can see all of your files, your scenes on the left side of the screen. And so whatever I wrote out in a narrative form, I then kind of divide that up into scenes, and I poke that into Scrivener. And I don't write in order. I will
Okay.
pop into whatever scene is in, like I feel inspired to write that day. And so that's a really good thing when you've plotted, because you know in general all the scenes that you're going to be writing. I've had stories kind of change up on me halfway through,
Right.
and I'm totally willing to deviate from what I initially came
But
up
you
with.
have a pretty good idea of like where you're starting, where you're ending, and like your beats like throughout the story.
Exactly. Yeah, I'd like to do that up front. I find it really fun, and I it helps me get into the writing each day already kind of having like a little bit of a map to follow.
See, I like the fact that you write your books out of order. Because I sometimes read my books out of order, so it makes me feel like I'm doing things okay.
You're basically just following the writing process.
Exactly. Do you face any challenges as a romance author?
I would say I don't know that I have run into a whole lot of challenges being a romance author. There's definitely the whole if I try to I'm getting more into having in-person events or like visiting bookstores and everything. But a lot of times if I am planning on reaching out to a bookstore that is not a romance bookstore, I feel like I have to do research beforehand. I have to, if I can go to the bookstore, I go and I check and see if they have a romance section, or I'll go on their website and see if they're highlighting any romance books, because there's definitely this like the there are some independent bookstores that I want to support, but it's hard when like you see that they're not supporting romance, and you just kind of you're bracing for if I ask them, hey, would you want to have me possibly getting their nose turned up at you? And and I really feel like the best it's really dependent upon the actual booksellers at the bookstore, because if there is someone on staff who loves romance, you can tell because they have pushed to have a romance section. They have pushed to have like a romance staff pick or have a romance book club. So it's that like dueling thing of I want to support indie bookstores, but I also
But they
want the
also
indie.
have to support it.
Which is, I'm like, there's a lot, indie bookstores have money problems sometimes, and there's a lot of money in the romance genre.
I mean, yeah,
Yeah.
it is a $1 billion industry for a reason.
There you go. So yeah, I would say that that's I haven't had anyone like spit in my face when I'm like I write romance, like get out of here. But I've actually I think that it's the stigma is changing, or people are realizing like, hey, this is they are at least realizing it's a money maker. I still think that there's lots of room to
Improve.
improve on the respect area of like this is actually good content. So
Well, and it's one of those things where like it takes a lot of thought, a lot of work, a lot of effort to create a really sound book.
yeah, and I find it funny because I'm like, so I'm a single person, not super interested in romance in my personal life. But like everyone who's ever been like, oh, you write romance? I'm like, dude, you're married. Like you're living romance. Why would it be so weird that I would want to write about it? So yeah, it's definitely, and I do think it's a different kind of writing. It's a different skill set to aim for a positive resolution and to give readers hope. I mean, it's really easy to kill a character off. You're just like gone. But like, how easy is it to, tie up emotional wounds and like make it seem realistic that this person, that these people aren't going to end their relationship in like a week or two? I feel like it's a more delicate type of writing and crafting.
So when you're going, like if you're doing contemporary and then you're switching back to a paranormal, do you change the way in which you approach your writing style and your story creation, or is it pretty much the same on both sides?
I would say it's very similar, other than I would say that the magical stories, I always like tell myself, oh, I want to do a magical story because I can make up the rules of the world. But then I get into it and I'm like, oh no, I've got to make up the rules of the world. So there's still world building and contemporary, but you're building within the bounds that everyone understands. But when you're writing a magical book, you have to create some new rules, and then you have to make sure that you are applying them equally throughout the book. Like, you can't just create a magic rule and then forget about it, because readers will be like, hey, you could have solved that problem easily if you just used this spell that you mentioned in chapter two, and you're like, oh, dang it. So I like to use this simple, like, four questions that I'll ask myself about different magic things, and it's oh gosh, I'll like run, I'll forget them now. What can magic do? What can magic not do? How does magic feel or sound or look or smell or taste? Like, what are the physical representations of the magic? And what does it cost to use the magic? And so, kind of applying those four structures to what, and that can apply to like actual like magic spells, but it can also apply to like magical creatures. If you're doing werewolves, you gotta are you people do werewolves in different ways, so you
So
need
many
to
different ways. And that's the one thing I love about it is like you can read six different like werewolf books and the lore is completely different in all six of them.
exactly, yeah. And so that's so you can use those rules to just kind of help define it and then keep it consistent throughout the story. So that's an extra level of magic books. So I would not say making the rules to my world makes it easier. It actually adds an extra layer, but it is like a fun layer to play around with. But that's kind of why I like to go back and forth, because after writing a magical book, I'm like, oh, that was
You're a little tapped
exhausting. Can I
out.
just go back to the real world now?
So, when you're writing, do you have any habits or rituals that help you stay focused?
I love a coffee shop. I love going to work in a coffee shop, getting a latte, getting a little pastry. And it's mainly because I will, if I'm working at home, if I'm writing at home, I'm actually really good at doing like my businessy stuff and staying on track with that. But when it comes to writing, I'll be like, oh, I don't know what that means. I should, or what, how that works. I should look it up on YouTube.
Oh, and then you get super distracted.
And then I'm like, well, I definitely need to watch this video about home renovation. It's like, that's not what the book's about. So yeah, if I'm in public, then I'm not going to be watching YouTube videos. And a lot of times I won't even ask the coffee shop for their Wi-Fi password, so like I can't even get on the internet.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah, I also have, I don't know if you've heard of FreeWrite, but it's a no distraction writing tool.
Oh yeah, I've seen those. Those are pretty cool.
Yeah, so if I'm drafting, that is a great thing. It's definitely, you don't want to edit on it. It's really just about like getting words down on the page. And I am all about having a messy, just disgusting first draft that I will fix up later. I don't like to get hung up on editing throughout the initial drafting process. So yeah, no distraction typing tool is a fantastic thing.
Yeah, I've seen a few different authors that use that and they really enjoy writing their first draft on it.
Yeah, it's good. It's just, and also it's like it got a nice like clicky keyboard. And I've had like multiple people come up to me and be like, "What is that?" Because it kind of feels like a typewriter almost.
Well, it almost looks like one too, like when you see them. Like, I mean, they have the like the little screen, but I mean, I guess newer typewriters have little screens too, so it has that same element to it.
Yeah, you feel important. I honestly feel like I sometimes work better when I think the people around me are like, she's working on something important, and I'm like, I am.
Because
And then he took
they
off her
can hear the
shirt.
clicking, and he
Yeah.
took off for sure. So let's talk Love in Plain Sight. It releases December 16th, 2025. It's a brother's best friend. They're kind of nemesis, kind of not. It is mostly small town, but it is the story of George and Beth. Now, let me tell you, there are trigger warnings in this book, so make sure you look at those because there's a lot of heavy topics in this. But I was finishing this book, and I actually was finishing it this morning because I like to have it like fresh in my mind. And I texted Becky and Amanda, and I was like, Lauren Connelly needs freaking trigger warnings because, like, just emotional, like, distress. Because I was like bawling at the end of it, and I'm like, every freaking time she gets me.
Well, I am sorry and yet not.
Yeah, don't be sorry. But also, so this is mostly told, actually, it is almost consistently told in Beth's point of view, which as a reader, I don't always like that. But I was like, I was not mad about it this time. And Becky's like, it must be really good.
That's another thing. Not all of my books are single POV. A lot of my books are dual POV. I feel like I was reading multiple books. I think I was like Allie Hazelwood, Emily Henry type things, where I was like, oh, these are single POV, but I am still getting like I was loving how I was seeing the male protagonist fall in love through actions that the female protagonist did not pick up on. It was kind of like the Darcy hand clench thing.
Yes. I mean, who
And
doesn't
so
love
I,
that?
yeah, and so I was like, I, and a lot of times when it comes to writing a new story, an aspect of the new idea will arise from something I saw another author did and loving that like story type technique and wanting to try it out and play with it myself. And so I was thinking, I was like, I read a lot of books when I was younger that were all single POV, because I feel like dual POV is a little bit of a newer.
It is, yeah.
Yeah,
Especially
and
like
so
first person single POV.
yeah. And so I mean, I love a dual POV. I love getting in both the characters' heads, but sometimes it is, especially when the female main character thinks that the male main character does not like her. It is so much fun to not actually get in his head and to only get the hints through his actions, and you just get to be like, you dummy, you can't tell. Look, I can tell. I'm getting the same things you're getting, but I know and you don't. And so it's kind of fun to write stories like that. So, and also it's kind of the story itself. Do I need to be in both of their heads in order to tell the story, or is the story largely about the female protagonist, which I have felt like that's P.S. I Hate You and Love in Plain Sight were a lot about the female protagonist's growth. And when I thought about all the scenes, for the most part, I was like, I think it would best be served from her point of view. And so why not just make it a single POV?
Well, and I think it really worked because a lot of the stories about Beth and like coming to terms with a lot of things in her life. Like she has a brother who they kind of grew up together, but they didn't at the same time because their dad never recognized her, which a lot of people don't realize because she has a tendency to keep a lot close to the vest.
Yeah. And so, yeah, and it's, yeah, getting to like, and being in her head the whole time, you see how much she's keeping from everyone and what everyone else gets to just kind of see this people-pleasing mask that she puts up.
Well, and it is such a poignant part of the story too, like when Sean, the brother, finds out some of these truths that he thinks things are one way and but they're not. And I, the side like supporting characters in this book, like Darla and Billy, who Beth grew up with and they have been friends for a long time, and then Sean, who is Beth's brother but also George's best friend. He is like the sunshiniest, like almost to a point of obnoxiousness,
Ha
but like delightful characters. And then Darla is the most curmudgeon-y human being that I'm like, oh man, I actually see a lot of myself in her. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but they butt heads so much, but he is enamored by her. And I just,
Yeah.
the supporting cast and like the care that they show Beth, all in their own ways, I think is just really great.
Thank you. Yeah, I love writing these side characters that feel like they have their own stories that like multiple people have been like, where's the next book for them? And yeah, I love a golden retriever black cat situation, and that's what you're getting with like Sean and Darla. She's
Oh,
basically just a black cat taking a swipe at the goofy
she's
dog,
more
and
like
he's
a
like,
panther.
more.
Like,
Oh
she's
yeah,
just straight up panther.
she's rough, but he's made of rubber. It all bounces off.
Well, and with Darla, I don't want to give away too much, but there's a scene where they talk about the zombie apocalypse. I laughed so hard when like that happened, 'cause first off, like, we talk about that on the podcast every once in a while, like, or in our book clubs, and it's like, if there was a zombie apocalypse, like, go ahead and just take me first, like, I will be useless, like, I acknowledge that. But I just laughed so hard when she was like, you are too nice, you will just invite everybody in.
We would have no resources if you weren't my zombie apocalypse team.
Yeah, no zombie apocalypse teams for Sean.
You gotta be ruthless.
And she is that. But so George, like, he and Sean have been best friends for a long time. They grew up together. Their parents like co-own a business, and they're very different but very similar at the same time. George is one of those characters, like, since we don't get a lot of his point of view, we get like the outside perspective from him. But in that, it's fine because he's closed off, but not.
Yeah, he's like quiet but honest to it,
Yes.
except for the like one truth that he kind of keeps to himself. But yeah, it's like if you ask him something, he'll
He doesn't
tell
really hold
you.
back. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just you need to ask him.
Well, that's the thing. Like, he does not give opinion. Like, when he has something to say, he says it. And there's just such a quiet strength about him in the way that he does things.
And that's like another thing about writing a quiet male main character that you're not getting in their head. I really had to be cognizant of like, okay, what is George doing right now, and how is Beth? And it really helped that she immediately, scene one, this isn't spoiling anything, develops an unwanted crush on him.
Well, because you open kind of on a bang.
Yeah, it's a little bit. I'm like, I don't know if airports are going to stock this book. There's a
Maybe
bit.
if they just skip chapter one.
Yeah. But when you have. I'm sorry, I'm about to cough. I'm going to
Oh, that's
just.
fine.
So when you have a crush on someone, you like notice everything that they do. So that was helpful with like George being a quiet person, Beth still clocking like his littlest movements.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, like, she really starts to tune in, like, his little idiosyncrasies that, like, he's kind of had this whole time, because she talks about, like, throughout the book, how, like, when they he went she went to a party at Sean's apartment, and he, like, walked out, like, right after. And there's so many little, like, tells, like, through the book, that she's like, well, he's avoiding me. But then we find out why things like that were happening. And it's like, oh, well, that makes sense. But Darla's like, you know, he's staring at you, like, he wants to basically eat you up. And she's like, what? And then it's like, pay attention.
Yeah, and I also, for the readers out there who like to reread books, which I love to reread my favorites, like I'll give myself a few months to kind of forget all the little details and then I'll go back and reread it. I love those whole, I don't know why he's avoiding her in the beginning, and then once you finish the book, you do know why. And so for the ones who like to reread it and they go back and they're like, oh,
Like,
now I
yes.
know why he's doing that. And so you get this like second round of excitement
Well,
about
and you
these like,
pick up like little things you didn't the first time.
yeah. So it's single POV can be fun, but I also completely understand sometimes it doesn't work out. You feel like you've kind of missed half the book. So it is a skill set that I'm glad that people are liking my single POV books, 'cause that's another thing. I did have kind of some established readers, and they were used to be me being a dual POV writer, and I'm like, okay, I'm giving you something new, and it worked in PS I Hate You, and I feel like people are liking Love in Plain Sight, so
Well, and so I found you from Letter Late Than Never, which that book tore me apart, but in the best ways. Like Lindsay and I, another like contributor on the podcast, like we read it and we loved it. And it was one of those books where like the mental health rep is so spot on and important in the way that you did it. And you have a decent amount of that in this book as well. And it just, you take a care with it that not every author does, but you also don't shy away from it, which I appreciate.
Thank you. Yeah, I think part of it arises from when I was younger, like high school. I know that I had some friends who were dealing with mental health issues that I didn't fully understand or comprehend, and I feel like I wasn't the best kind of friend that I should have been, and so I think it's really important. If you, sorry, I'm gonna
No,
cough
it's
again.
fine.
Cough in a day.
Well, and that's why we have Mike Burrier, who can like take all the bad things out if we need to. So
Okay, that's great. Yeah, I don't know. It's like allergies or something.
allergies are the worst.
Yeah. But yes, when dealing with mental health, I think a lot of times it's kind of demonized, and there's a lot of nuances to it. And there's a lot of people who have done the work to figure out how to live their lives with mental health issues, and how to and it's a roller coaster. There's ups and downs. It's not always consistent. And then also just being someone who is in the life of someone who is having mental health issues, you have to find a balance of support but not being overwhelming. And there's all these, like, you always have questions of should I be doing more or should I be giving them space? And like, I can't impose anything upon them, but I want to make sure that they know that they're supported. So I'm glad that you feel that I represent it well in the books. It is definitely something that I try to treat with the utmost care during the writing process, and I really dive deep into it.
No,
but
I
yeah, I
think
also
you
think it's
do.
important to be in books because a lot of people in the world experience these things.
Well, I'm a big advocate on like therapy and things like that. It's like I honestly like some people don't agree, but I think that everybody should go to therapy at least one time in their life because it is such a wonderful tool, whether or not you get as much out of it as somebody else, but it is a way to learn things that you may not have known
Yeah.
previous.
Yeah. And our brains need care just like our bodies do.
They really, really do. But this story, it's so fun and I really enjoyed it. And there's a the moms, like all the moms are amazing, but I hate the dads.
Yes. And this is what is so funny about that is that this book is basically like for my dad, because so the reason that I wanted to write an airplane romance is because my dad has been a pilot my whole life. He does it as a hobby, but he actually got his pilot's license the day that he met my mom. And so that I always like had in the back of my head. I was like, that's a really cool meet cute or something. But yeah, he helped me a lot with all of the
I was
planning.
gonna say there was a lot of like factual, like I was like, how much research did she do? Or is she actually like, does she know how like have firsthand knowledge of this?
Yeah, so we went on like multiple plane rides, and I was asking him all these questions. And yeah, so he the book is dedicated to him, and I got to the end of it, and I was like, oh no, there's no nice dads in this
There's
book.
there well, Tosh's dad we think is nice, but we don't ever meet him, so we don't really know. But yeah, I was like, oh man, there's so many fun moms and wonderful moms and loving moms, and then we met the dads.
Yeah, that's we'll just imagine that one day George and Sean are dads, and
That's true.
they'll be good dads.
Sean would be like, I mean, even if he's not a dad, he will definitely be the fun uncle.
Sean would be like, I want to carry all the babies on me at all time, and he's like, I'm gonna be head of the PTA.
Oh yeah, he is a ray of sunshine, that's for sure. But so a big part of the book is Beth, like she's always wanted to get her pilot's license, but money is tight. Her mom has been through multiple bouts of like cancer recurrences and dealing with treatments and things like that. And George has his license, and the book opens up and they're in the plane and there's emergency landings and things are happening, and then he offers to like teach her, and that is a big part of the story, and like her not being able to afford things and the money discrepancies between them, and also the fact that women pilots don't always get their due.
Yeah, and that's actually so I interviewed multiple female pilots to get their perspective, because I wrote the first draft before I interviewed them, and I was like, I don't
You're like, I
I
need to
my
know if this is how it works.
yeah, and I actually knew that this was potentially how it was because of my dad. He because he would say things like, we don't have any females in the flight club, and he was, he's like, I would really like to change that, but I'm not sure how to go about doing that. And I'm like, well, are you guys reaching out to female pilots, things like that? And so, and he would like he reads like aviation magazines, and so he was like showing an article talking about how some airlines were trying to be more supportive of females entering the field. So like I had this inkling that this was potentially an issue, and I think from rants that I have gone in the past, my dad is more cognizant of this nowadays. So he's like, yeah, honestly, it is. And so, but then I interviewed these female pilots, and they love the flying. They absolutely love it. But they did point out multiple times where they felt as though they were treated differently because they were women. But of course, you also have this, if I called it out, am I going to be gaslighted? Am I going to be told that I'm the whiny one, or anything like that? And so you just have to work harder. So in some ways, like female pilots are probably better because they feel like they've got to work
They have
twice
to
as
prove
hard.
themselves, yeah.
Yeah. And so I thought that what I want so badly is that at least one reader finishes this book and says, I want to get my pilot's license. Like that would be so amazing. And I've like in the acknowledgments or in the author's note, I've included some links to help with that. But also what I was trying to kind of convey throughout the book with Beth's journey is that it can seem more daunting than it actually is. It's like when you're not given all the information, which a lot of times women aren't given all the information, it may feel like it's a much higher hurdle to get over. Like it is an expensive hobby, but there's also resources out there if you know about them that can help you get your license for a lower cost and things like that. And so I wanted to convey that sometimes Beth makes things a little harder for herself than they have to be, not intentionally, but there is also really this imbalance that currently exists. And just FYI, the club and everything is fake in the book. I like didn't want anyone, any club. Well, if a club, someone in a club is reading it and they're like, "Is this about us?" Then you should take a look at your club in the
Yeah,
mirror. Like,
seriously. Yeah,
it is
because
a
you.
fictionalized club and a fictionalized airport that they fly out of. Although I do mention some real airports later on. But yeah, so that's it was really helpful to talk to those female pilots, and they added depth to the character of Beth. I went in to edits and I was able to like give her even more, real experiences.
Well, and just the way that she was inspired to become a pilot. Like she talks about how they went on this trip and just being in the plane and experiencing that. Like she just wanted to move forward, but she felt so stuck
Yeah.
because, like, here is her brother who is very, like, raised in a very wealthy household, and she did not have the same experiences and chances that he did. And it's nothing like Sean has really no clue. Like he does not like realize that things are the way they are. And so it's just, she's her own worst enemy a lot of times,
Yeah.
which is very real.
Yeah, and frustrating for some readers to read, but it's also like it's yeah,
I
that's
mean,
real. A lot
look
of
in a
times
mirror.
we are
Like,
our worst
oh,
enemies.
definitely. So what's next for you?
So next, as I mentioned earlier, I like to write some magic books. So I've got some magic books coming from they are so Ace and Berkeley are kind of like twins, cousins. They're imprints that work very closely together. So I have a magical book that right now the title, which I think we've settled on the title, is Shelves and Shadows. And that should be coming out from Ace next year. And that's going to be a magical library book. So yeah, and that one is a little bit darker. I like to call it creepy cozy. So that book has that's been a lot of this past year has been working on that book, but I'm very excited about it and should hopefully have a cover to reveal relatively soon. I am so excited for I requested a specific artist and we got that artist.
Oh,
So
really?
I'm so pumped to share with everyone her work once we get the final version.
Nice.
And then yeah, I've got some of my self-published books I'll be putting out next summer. So I recently put out Claws and Crochet, which is a werewolf crochet book, romance. And so the second book in that series will be coming out next summer. And so yeah, I got a lot of magical books next year.
So, will we ever get a Sean and Darla book?
I don't know if we'll get a book, but I've been working on a bonus scene to be
Ooh.
like anyone who signs up for my newsletter will get the bonus scene.
Okay, well, I
So
look
I will
forward to
definitely
that because
give you some more Sean and Darla content.
they make me laugh and I love them so much. Well, I
Yeah.
look forward to all those things. Also, your Claws and Crochet, I love that cover so much.
Thank you. Yeah. That's a fun that was a fun one to do, and I'm glad that readers have been liking that one as well.
Well, thank you so much, Lauren, for stopping by and chatting all things today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And until next time, happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.